The title of this message is Be Strong, Especially in the Quiet Hours, or Use Tough Love. Osi, who was like a brother, grew up like a brother, was actually my uncle, died just a little bit before he became 74. And he lived a very successful life. Tell you how successful his life was. He had a 70th birthday. It was a big gala thing, big crowds. And we were driving to it, and it was in the Freedom Center in downtown Cincinnati. And it was also the Reds were playing a game there, and the two buildings were near each other. And the parking, when the Reds are there, a bunch of St. Louis Cardinals fans were down there, too. They're playing the Cardinals. Parking was a mess. So I pulled over a state trooper who was directing. I said, well, where should we park? And I'm not here for the Reds game. He says, oh, you're here for the OC's 70th birthday. I was impressed. The state troopers knew where to tell us to go park for his birthday. So he took up a violin at 60, I think it's 65, to help his grandchildren. So he lived a successful life. But I want to go back to a crucial time in his life. I believe it's about 60 years ago, when he was about 13 or 14. The police brought him home late one night. He was running with a bunch of troubled youth. That's the best way to put it. And I was at the top of the stairs. I was probably about 8 or 9 years old. And I was listening. And as a policeman, he was in the police car. And the policeman came, and Daddy said, look, I know that you want to bring him home and whatever the details were, but I don't want you to bring him home. I want you to take him back to the police station, let him spend the night in jail, and scare the living daylights out of him about the kids he's running with and the behavior that he's been doing. And the police did that, and obviously it worked. I call that tough love on the part of Daddy. And I believe that saved OC. So you might ask, well, why does God allow evil in the world? There are probably a lot of, it's a philosophical thing. People write books about it. But why does God allow evil in this age? At least one part of it is he's using tough love to teach mankind a lesson. Just like O.C. spent the night in the Cincinnati police station in jail, God allows mankind to live at least during this age we're in now, seeing the results of going God, man's way without God's law and without God's direction. Kind of like the world is living its night in the slammer. But we ourselves also are in a crucial part of our life. And if we respond poorly to this part of our life, our spiritual life, we could slide back into worldliness and decadence or into false religion or some self-righteous cultist extreme. And what I'm saying is these quiet moments, these lulls, are a test, and the hardest test. For instance, when the church is growing and everything is exciting and big things are happening, it's kind of easy to stick with it because there's a certain amount of excitement. Everything's growing, getting bigger, bigger, bigger. Back in the, if you want to call it the glory days of the Worldwide Church of God. It's harder now that we're in a lull. Let's look at Paul's advice. I believe, at least historically, believe this is the end of what they call the apostolic era, when it was clear that God's miraculous powers were declining, because Paul left, Miletus sick at a time when earlier, 30 years earlier, he healed everybody on the island. It'd be like me going to Jamaica and emptying out all the hospitals. Well, that's what Paul did. So let's go, some of the advice that Paul gave Timothy toward the end of the apostolic era, as things start to quiet down. Although, obviously, there was more excitement then than there is now. Let's look at 2 Timothy 2, verse 1. 2 Timothy 2, verse 1. Here's the advice Paul gave Timothy, because he had to carry on the leadership of the churches that Paul had established as things are going into the declining era. And we believe apostasies at the end of the apostolic era took over, and, well, anyway, a lot of what eventually been thought of as Christianity were churches that were led astray. 2 Timothy 2:1, you therefore, my son, be strong, let me emphasize the word strong, in the grace that is in Christ Jesus. So Paul, and the word strong is the Greek endunamo. And you can kind of hear in that Greek word the endure with strength. Endunamo, you know, because dynamite also comes from the Greek. Endure with strength or receive strength. So we should ask for the grace and power of God to stand strong during this lull in church power and church history. Verse 3, 2 Timothy 2, verse 3. You therefore endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. By the way, Roman legionnaires were very tough. You can read stories, especially read about the history of Julius Caesar. And their Roman soldiers were often outnumbered, but they were like a machine. They were disciplined, you know, and legions, and they were just like a machine. They were like a block of 100 guys with shields, and they were tough and strong and very disciplined. By the way, have you ever noticed, if you study war and armies, armies often have to fight outdoors in some of the worst environments in the world. Just think about the deserts of North Africa, the tropical islands of the Pacific, the tropical islands of, or the tropics of Vietnam. You get the general idea. Or George Washington at Valley Forge in the snow. You get the idea. You have to really endure. By the way, the George Washington Valley Forge story is quite a story. Actually, you might say they won that war on endurance. They just outlasted the British. And the British had all the supplies and equipment, living comfortably in Philadelphia while they were enduring hard times in Valley Forge. But all of the people in Paul's day would know about Roman soldiers, and they'd realize that Paul is saying, stay committed, stay dedicated, be tough. And by the way, I remember when you're young and you watch war stories, there's bands playing when they charge the beach. But in real life, there is no band playing. It has to be personal discipline of the individual soldiers. We're going to come back to this in a minute. Let's flip over one page, the 2 Timothy 4, verse 3 and 4. There's a point here that I want to make that's a real important point. 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 3 and 4. So 2 Timothy 4, verse 3. For the time will come, this is Paul telling Timothy what's coming, when they will not endure sound doctrine. He's talking about the church now, not the world. But after their own lust shall they heap to themselves teachers having itching ears, and they shall turn away their ears from the truth and be turned unto fables. You might ask yourself, how did all the fables get into Christianity? Well, here's what church history shows. And the church actually once had a book about this that Dr. Hay got out of another book. But if you look at church history, the church would have great leadership. And it started at the end of the apostolic era. And then apostasies brought the church numbers down. And only a small percentage stayed with the truth. And the rest went off. And then you go a little while, I call it the lull period, when the church is small. Then great leadership comes, and you get another big growth. And then after a while, the majority would go to apostasy, and you go back down another low. And by the way, I think God allowed that, because if the church kept growing and growing and growing and growing and growing, do you realize it would be a powerful influence in the world? If God is going to allow the church to be the narrow path, the small, scattered church, a church which is not a major player in the world, because this is Satan's world, Satan's society. I'm not saying everybody's inspired by Satan, but the world as a whole is not God's society. God could do a much better job of running the world than this. So if God's going to let his church remain small, it has to occasionally go through that apostasy cycle, and only a minority stay with the truth. And that's clearly what a study of church history would show you. For instance, take the Mormons, who started getting about 1800. They now have millions of members, millions. Even the Worldwide Church of God, if it had kept growing at the pace it was growing, in some cities like Cincinnati and Chicago, they'd be major players in the church scene there. Really, if they had that many, if they kept growing at the pace they were growing. So I'm saying, we might argue about why God allowed it, but it's quite clear. Paul was telling Timothy, a falling away is coming because people have itching ears. They're going to want to hear things that are easy to believe, fables. They're not going to want the truth. And that happened. What I'm arguing is that we're in one of those lull periods when the church isn't growing real big and nothing, at least in the church sense, nothing spectacular is going on. Do you realize it's harder to stand firm during the quiet times? If this were exciting times and the church leadership was exciting and we're growing like 30, 40, 50% a year, we had big conventions, there are hundreds of church members everywhere, it would be easy. Because it was a lot easier back in the glory days of Worldwide. For those of us who remember it, it was a lot easier. It's harder. It's sort of like a soldier who's on sentry duty, but there's no war going on. You know, it's quiet out there. It's probably going to stay quiet. It's hard to stay alert when nothing is going on. But it's important to stay alert because you never know when they're going to need you. And in those days, by the way, if a sentry was caught falling asleep, they'd shoot him. You know. And the Roman Empire was, they wouldn't shoot him, but they'd do terrible things to him. So the apostasy of the Worldwide Church of God is not over yet. The great falling away is still taking place. All kinds of little groups are splitting off and doing their thing. What you often find is, let's say if somebody gets a group, and he wants to solidify his leadership and control of them, you got to give him something special. So you give him the new special doctrine, and often you start changing doctrines. You give them that Jeroboam, Rehoboam thing, and off they go astray. Most of you know what I mean. But I do predict, as we get closer to the end, a great wave of power is coming to God's church, and God will pick some great leaders in the future. I assume they'll be the two witnesses, or maybe even other men as well. A great prophet is coming, because God doesn't do anything big without sending a prophet first, like John the Baptist came before Christ, and all the other famous prophets. Before Israel fell and Judah fell, you had great prophets like Jeremiah and Isaiah. I think Jeremiah actually existed during 5 administrations. He started as a young man, as a witness. So those things are coming. By the way, when God chooses a prophet, he'll make that prophet famous or infamous, if you like that term. So he'll have a lot of impact. For instance, when Elijah told Ahab, it's not going to rain except by my word, and then he turned around and walked out, the king, Ahab, probably thought, who does he think he is? Ahab and Jezebel, we're just doing just fine. The false prophet said, you're doing just great. Don't listen to him. After it stopped raining for 6 months, where is he? After a year, everybody was talking about, where is Elijah? The king had search parties. Where is he? When you read all of it and about what happened at Mount Carmel before he turned the rain back on, Elijah was on everybody's mind. Something like that is coming. I'm not saying I know who it will be and when it will be, but it's up the road. But we have to survive spiritually during this quiet period, which is actually harder than when all the excitement's going on. And if I were Satan the devil, I wouldn't persecute us too much. I would try to lull us to sleep. And to think about the strategy, Satan is seeing what happens, what makes the church stronger. And I think we're in a period where his strategy, I'm going to lull them to sleep, get them to fight with each other. And he's good at what he does. Let's give the devil his due. So when that power comes back up, say it's 5 or 6 years from now, and I'm not setting dates because I don't know, will we still be in the church? Will we be spiritually lost by then? Obviously, if you pass away and you're still in God's church, that's wonderful. And you may have missed the great tribulations, that may be doubly wonderful. But the point is, are you going to be there at either the end of your life or when the great prophets and things do come back? Or will Satan have lulled us to sleep? Let's go back to chapter 2, back a page over in 2 Timothy 2. The rest of what he told Timothy, verse 4. No man that wars, he's speaking of the army example again, and tangles himself with the affairs of this life, that he may please him who has chosen him to be a soldier, and a man who also strives for the masteries, yet he is not crowned except he strive lawfully. In other words, verse 5 is talking about athletes, when you get other translations. And it's basically saying, if you're an athlete and you're striving to master something, but it also applies to verse 4, you've got to focus like a laser beam. Let me give you an example. If you're going to be a gymnast in the Olympics coming up this summer, I guarantee you, they found, the Russians figured this out years ago, they take kids when they're young. I think the Chinese even younger, like 9 or 10, 11, who have athletic potential. They go to special schools, special camps away from their parents, and most of their life is focused on gymnastics to win a gold medal. I mean, literally, most of their life is focused on gymnastics. They go to special schools. They're focused like a laser beam to win, you know, that gold medal. And at a place I teach at, the most disciplined students, also I was on the athletic committee, and they have all the team GPAs. The gymnastics team's GPA, team GPA, is almost a perfect A's, like 4.9. Every now and then one of them screws up and gets a B. That's how disciplined they are. Literally, the gymnasts are disciplined. Matter of fact, one, we had a party. We had donuts with cake on the top and some icing. And this gymnast almost panicked at the sight of those donuts. Ah, I'm going to ruin her diet. We have to be balanced about it. But I'm making that statement to make the point about how disciplined they are. Not that I'm asking you to eat donuts. Or as Byford says, only eat them occasionally when you think you need it. But I want to tell you this story. This story is dedicated to Jesse. Jesse will understand. The story is called The Forgetter. It's kind of a poem story. Jesse will get this. My forgetter's getting better, but my rememberer is broke. To you, that may seem funny, but to me, it's no joke. But when I'm here, I'm wondering if I really should be there. When I try to think it through, I haven't got a prayer. Oftentimes, I'll walk into a room and I say, what am I here for? I rack my brain, but all in vain. A zero is my score. At times, I put something away when it is safe. But we, the person it's safest from is generally me. When shopping, I may see someone say hi, and I have a chat. Then when the person walks away, I ask myself, who in the world was that? Yes, my forgetter is getting better, while my rememberer is broke, and it's driving me plumb crazy, and that just isn't any joke. Well, I threw that joke in there to remind us to remember past history. Church history shows that cycle of, and if you can find the original booklet, which isn't around, or the original book written at the turn of the 20th century, all is in there, and you can see all the groups, now they got big, and they apostatized, and a small percentage stayed with the truth. And that's when it's tougher to hang on, during those low periods. And I believe we're in a quiet period. But can't you see that at any moment when God allows it, I said when God allows it, Europe could collapse financially and very soon the beast could be there in Europe? And can you see that when God allows it, the Middle East could unite around some caliphate to create the king of the south and the king of the north? Put a pressure on Israel, build a temple, and the stage is set for the end. I can see it. As a matter of fact, they say the Muslim Brotherhood supporters are in the crucial battle in Syria, and they're about to win. I realize no one knows that, because those civil wars are hard to predict. But probably they will win. And you can kind of see the Middle East, even though it's violent and chaotic, it will remain that. But can you see it kind of lining up behind Islamic extremists? Which is not good for Israel or America, though our politicians haven't figured that out yet. But we'll see it soon. 2 Timothy 2, verse 6. The husbandman, or the farmer, that labors must be first partaker of the fruit. And I think we have to be like a farmer. If we help work the field now, during this low period, before the power, we will be able to harvest a crown of glory in the future. If we help the work now, we can harvest a crown of glory in the future. So I say, pray for the work. Support the work. Support the local and national church. Let's go to Revelation 5, verse 10. Verses we all know, but just want to read a few of them to remind us. Revelation 5, 10. And he has made us, meaning us New Testament Christians, unto our God kings. I mean, king rules. And priests. And priests rule, you know, all kinds of other things like churches and those kinds of things and education. And we shall reign, you know. And another chapter says with a rod of iron. And we shall reign on the earth. Not in heaven, not shuffling harp music in heaven. Reign on the earth. That's the reward. If like a farmer, we plant the seed now. Let's go to Romans 8. All verses we know well, but I want to just remind us, to encourage us to hang strong during these quiet days when it's harder to remain committed to God. Romans 8, verse 18. For I know that in me, that is, in my flesh, I'm sorry, that's chapter 7, verse 8:18. At least I was smart enough to know when I read the wrong line, my eyes said, wait a minute. Romans 8:18. For I reckon that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. Notice, glory revealed in us, little old me and you. For the earnest expectation of the creature waits for the manifestations of the sons of God. Notice, this whole planet is waiting for the coming of the sons of God. We are God's seed. And unfortunately, or fortunately, how you look at it, God has given mankind free will. So we have to pay for our bad choices. And the world is suffering. Verse 22. We know that the whole creation groans and travails in pain together until now. Not only they, but ourselves also, which have the first fruits of the Spirit. We are the first ones. We're the small harvest. We ourselves groan within ourselves, waiting for the adoption with the redemption of our bodies. We're waiting for it. We feel it. We're waiting for it. 2 Thessalonians, we need to just keep that in mind to encourage ourselves to stay strong during these quiet times. 2 Thessalonians 2, verse 3. 2 Thessalonians 2, verse 3. Let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come, except there come a falling away first. And the implication doesn't mean that occasionally someone falls away. That always happens. It means a significant falling away first. And that man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition. In other words, Paul was telling his followers in Thessalonica and Timothy and the others that a falling away was coming to the church, and it had to come before the end. And so the great falling away is taking place now. And I think it's aided by a lull in the church. If we were big and we were growing and there was all kind of exciting youth meetings and this meeting, it'd be easy. You get caught up in the action. It's harder to remain faithful and stand now during the lull and quiet period. But we'll be rewarded wonderfully if we can remain faithful now. Verse 14. Whereunto he called you by our gospel to the obtaining of the glory of our Lord Jesus Christ. We can obtain glory. Therefore, brethren, stand fast. And I want to emphasize that word. Stand fast. Verse 15, 2 Thessalonians 2, 15. Stand fast. Hold the traditions which you've been taught, whether by word or our epistles. In other words, stay with the truth. Verse 16, now our Lord Jesus Christ himself and God, even our Father, which loved us and has given us everlasting consolation and good hope through grace, comfort your hearts and establish you in every good work. So let God establish us. Let God establish us. We have to just kind of relax, stand firm, and let God establish us. And remember, if I were the devil... And I remember there were times when mother got mad at me and said, boy, you have the devil in you. And probably a lot of kids have heard that once in a while in their life when somebody got mad at you. But if I were the devil, I would be saying, relax. Take it easy. The world isn't so bad. Have some fun. Eat more candy. Not that I'm against candy, but in the general principle, eat candy. Don't worry about praying today. Don't worry about going to church. Don't worry about reading the Bible. Relax. Go with the flow. Take it easy. Relax. He would be saying, spiritually, go asleep. Where God is saying, no, during these quiet periods, God requires growth. And you read Matthew 25, and both the analogy to the 10 virgins, the ones about talent, both of those say, whatever God has given you, keep it alive, keep it growing, keep using it. Don't let the devil lull us to sleep. And remember, I really believe this is true, there will be an upshot in power and visibility to this church and the church leadership, or maybe we'll combine with somebody else that God is using. But I think we'll see it, because we're watching. When it happens, we'll see it. When that visibility of power comes to the church, sure, it'll be easier to get caught up in it, but will we still be viable? A lot of people will be, and I see them, and I can name names and list. They're drifting away into either extreme things, cultish things, or just back in the world. The devil is good at what he does. Don't let him lull you out of God's church during these times. Remember, power is coming to God's church. I believe if we live long enough, we'll see some great miracles. But the main thing is, the message I want to deliver today is, number one, be dedicated soldiers of Christ. Like a sentry on duty during the quiet middle of the night, watching for danger that may come that probably won't come. Matter of fact, you might ask, why did they fire the admiral who was supposed to be in charge of Pearl Harbor? There have been many false warnings. Well, I think another general at Hickam Air Base, well, they weren't really prepared. I mean, they knew the potential attack would come. And I understand that with all those false warnings, and no one really expected to come early Sunday morning. You know, so I'm not saying I don't understand. But if you're a good soldier, you're always ready. You're ready even during the quiet times, like early Sunday morning when nobody would expect an attack. We have to stay dedicated now, like a quiet sentry in the middle of the night. Keep doing God's work. You never know. Some little group like us might call the man, or at least get him thinking about important things, that God is going to use as a great prophet. It's possible. Because Stephen's martyrdom and probably other things probably set up Paul to be called. The second thing I want to say is, focus like a laser beam. Just like an athlete who wants to win, say, the gymnastics gold medal. Those people practice and practice and practice. As a matter of fact, if you look at the football team, I think the NFL is already out there, but college teams, in a week or two in the hot of August, they'll be out there working out. You go by the stadium out in the practice, they're out there working out, and they got to work hard in the hot sun to get ready to win. Well, hopefully they want to win a title. We need to stay ready. Focus on the things God wants us to do. And third and last, and if we, like a farmer, if we will sow those kinds of commitments now, we will reap a crown. We will someday reap glory and be baby gods. Isn't that a wonderful thing?